Well, let's stick with the world of technology because there's lots of other big news there. Last week, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the FBI announced that Russian hackers targeted and penetrated some of the country's most sensitive infrastructure, including power, nuclear, water, and aviation networks. Now, that news got buried a little bit, in my opinion, because the government included this announcement with the more headline-grabbing news that the Treasury Department had slapped new sanctions on Russians for interfering in the 2016 presidential election. So let's get back to this cyber hack of critical infrastructure. Because put another way, DHS is saying that the Russians could have turned off the lights and possibly even the water for parts of the country, maybe even much of the country. But here's the thing. Joel Brenner wasn't surprised by that. He's former National Security Agency Inspector General, and he worked in the office of the Director of National Intelligence. And a year ago, March 2017, on this very show, he warned that something like a Russian hack on our infrastructure could happen.
We know that sophisticated attackers can take down the systems that power our electric grid, pipelines, railway switches, banks, and so on.
Which is why, in 2017, Brenner and MIT's Research Policy Initiative offered recommendations to the Trump administration on how to prevent such attacks. And Joel Brenner joins us once again in the studio. Welcome back to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me back.
So this is your chance to tell America, I told you so.
Well, I would put it differently. Let's just say that what's new here is that the public is being told from high levels of government that this is as serious as some of us have been saying for quite some time. Mm. And it is very serious because our electric grid in particular, and frankly, lots of our critical infrastructure, by which I mean the kinds of systems that make the whole country work, not just electric power, but chemical plants, railroad transportation, all these things are penetrable. They're architecturally weak and easily penetrated, and we've known that for quite a while.
So I just want to talk for a second about how according to DHS, the Russians exploited some of those architectural weaknesses that you're talking about. It looks like they sort of got into the various systems through not perhaps initially directly through, say, a grid operator, but through subcontractors using things like, I don't know, what was it, hacked Microsoft Word documents and things like that?
Lots and lots of penetrations of major networks come through the third parties they deal with, the vendors, the contractors. Let me give you an example. The Target breach some years ago, which shocked the public, was actually accomplished by importing malware through their heating, ventilation, and air conditioning subcontractor.
Wow.
So that the one looks for, if you're an attacker, you look for the easy place to find. What's the soft underbelly? And that's often not the actual target you're after, but somebody that they deal with on a regular basis and trust. And that's what the Russians have been doing.
So staging malware with those smaller commercial operators, subcontractors. This is from DHS. The Russians conducted spear phishing, gained remote access into energy sector networks, sometimes using systems where logins didn't require second party verification, right? Through your phone, two-step verification,
right.
Things like that. But I guess we can talk about then what they did afterwards. But it does make me wonder what you're describing is sort of a low tech, loosely connected, not very well overseen system of companies and subcontractors, but who collectively are in charge of extraordinarily important infrastructure in this country.
Collectively, they are, and individually, some of them are. But even when you're looking at an individual company, not just a sector, you're talking about systems of systems. And those systems of systems are being used by individuals. And very often, the people are the weakest part of of that system. People click on stuff they shouldn't click on. My old friends at NSA used to say that the weakest link in any system was never the silicon-based unit on the desk. It was
the carbon-based unit
in the chair. That's right. And that's the case here with phishing attacks, for example. Some of these are not individual behavior issues. They're management issues. For instance, not using dual-factor authentication mm-hmm. for sensitive systems. That's easy to do sometimes, but people have to understand that when they're doing something that important, yes, there's going to be 5 seconds of delay, and people have to tolerate that in order to achieve higher security.
Yeah. So I'm sort of working my way through the levels of cyber penetration here that DHS and the FBI says the Russians were able to achieve. That ultimately, the hackers collected information pertaining to industrial control systems. So, I mean, Joel Brenner, just not to put too fine a point on it, but is this the government saying that if the Russians had wanted to, they could have turned off the lights?
That's how I read it. I think that we are seeing what in military terms is called preparation of the battle space. In the old days, people talked about preparation of the battlefield. You prepositioned tanks near the border. You moved ammunition up where you'd need it. You did some psychological operations in the territory you were going to attack, for example. Now they talk about the battle space because so much of it is electronic. And I think that what we saw here was the prepositioning of tools that could be used to bring down a particular network.
But would Russia ever really go that far? Because I imagine if they did, I mean, maybe not, but there's the spy poisoning in the UK. But like if they did, if they decided to switch off the lights in New York City, wouldn't that be seen in the United States as tantamount to an act of war?
It might be. But here's what I want your listeners to understand. The existence of these vulnerabilities themselves conditions our exercise of national power. I'll give you an example. In 2014, when the bank J.P. Morgan was breached, initially it was thought that was a Russian attack. It wasn't. But that's what President Obama thought. And there was a piece in the New York Times in which Obama was quoted as asking his intelligence chiefs whether Putin was sending him the message, a message. That is, was Putin telling Obama, and this was when Ukraine was up in flames, not just smoldering, that if we, the United States, took more forceful action in Ukraine, that Putin was going to take down a major American bank? Now, that's something that the president would have to take into account when deciding how to exercise or whether to exercise our national power, including military power, so that the existence of fundamental vulnerabilities in civilian-controlled critical infrastructure does affect the White House's ability to pull the lever of international power. Because the game that's being played here now, Meghna, is not open warfare. Mm-hmm. The hostilities are taking place in the gray space between war and peace at the level that is carefully calibrated to be below the level of what the public calls acts of war, which would be an armed attack in the parlance of international law. So we're seeing things that are hostile, they are expensive, they do hamper us, they hobble us, but they're not things that are going to lead to open warfare. That's the space in which Putin is playing, and he plays his cards very well.
So the notion that the mere possibility of the Russians being able to do something like this and that might inform a U.S. national security response is very sobering. But to be fair, the U.S. is playing in this same space too, right? I mean, wasn't it the United States and Israel that unleashed Stuxnet onto Iran and stopped all their centrifuges in Iran?
We should hope that the United States knows how to play very well in this space. And we should certainly hope that. I'm not going to confirm what's widely accepted that it was the United States and Israel did that. The public information about it certainly looks that way. I can't speak to it directly because I was in office at the time.
Well, but how about the NSA's exploit that was originally the exploit that was originally identified by the NSA that ended up becoming the WannaCry virus when it was released to the public through a different
house? This is a very important conversation about that you're opening, a subject you're opening, which is what happens when a cyber weapon, which might take maybe only a few foreign intelligence services could develop. Once it's out there, it's like a cookbook recipe.
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of graduate students can do it. A bunch of undergraduate students can do it. That's happening right now. And I think that really raises the question of wouldn't it be desirable if we had some international constraints on it? I have to tell you, though, that the likelihood of international agreements in this area with China and Russia, who are the two parties we'd like to come to agreement with, is not going to happen. We can't even reach agreement with them on the treatment of common ordinary cyber fraud and crime.
Mm-hmm.
So that's however much one might like to see that. I think it's not in the cards anytime soon. If you equate an attempt to delay the Iranian nuclear program with an attempt to bring down civilian infrastructure, then I would have a disagreement with you about that. But there's no.
I'm not necessarily equating it. What I'm just saying that we shouldn't be naive in thinking that the United States is probably not also trying to be as sort of forward thinking about this new cyber battle space as Russia is.
Oh, that's absolutely right. And all nations that can do it are doing it. This is an area in which we couldn't afford not to be capable. But we are not exercising those capabilities at this point against civilian infrastructures elsewhere.
Well, so this gets us back to sort of what sort of defensive capabilities we ought to be thinking about here regarding our civilian infrastructure. Because I do note that there has been extensive reporting that Ukraine is the one I think of, that a couple of times in Ukraine in 2015 and 2016, it does seem as if Russian cyber offensive did knock out power in parts of Ukraine. So Ukraine has been something of a testing ground for the Russians. They've done it before. But I think there's something basic I want to explore with you here, Joel Brenner. I mean, when we talk about power, for example, or any one of these utilities, most of it is not owned by the federal government, right? I mean, these are private sector businesses that may be heavily regulated, but we're leaving a lot of the protections, the defensive protections, up to them, aren't we?
Oh, you're so right. The most frequent number I see is that something on the order of 85% of what we classify as critical infrastructure is privately owned. And in the United States, the government cannot simply issue orders as to how people ought to run their businesses, and we don't want them to do that. So the question is, how do we move that sector or group of sectors toward a more secure posture? The electric grid is, for the most part, regulated at the state level. The federal government regulates interstate transmission, but not the generation and delivery of electricity.
Right.
So that we really are talking about how could the federal government play a more active, much more robust convening role with public utility commissioners at the state and territorial level. I would like to see that. I don't see it happening now. And then the question is, well, what would you want to tell those people?
Okay. Well, just to that point, we do have a little bit of tape here. This is from last week, from March 14th. Energy Secretary Rick Perry was testifying about the Trump administration's $1.5 trillion infrastructure proposal, which includes some cyber.
DOE is in the process of establishing a new Office of Cybersecurity, Energy Security, Emergency Response, acronym is CSER. To enhance the resilience of our energy assets and better protect them from this growing cyber threat that is out there.
Okay, so that's Secretary Perry saying a new Office of Cybersecurity. But Joel Brenner, last year you told us very clearly that there are multiple recommendations that you forwarded to the Trump administration One of which was that we have to take critical infrastructure off the public internet. Just like build, I was going to say build a wall, but at least build a moat between
it. I think that isolation of critical controls, limited number of critical controls in critical infrastructure, isolating them from the public internet is absolutely essential if we're going to become materially more secure. Now, isolation is a relative term, and rational people can disagree about exactly how to implement that kind of notion. We do see it in some places. For example, in pipeline controls now, we see companies that have analog controls on pipeline pressure so that if the online electronic digital controls were to go haywire and intentionally run up the pressure in a line so that it would explode, you'd have an analog control that would override that. That's an example of an isolated control. You could not find that analog device on the network because it's not there. And if you can't find it, you can't attack it. Well, that's just one limited example. But by and large, you know, we've actually, in some of these cases, we've had controls that were accessible through Bluetooth. So the guy in the truck didn't have to get out of a truck on a rainy day to check the device.
That's I was half expecting you saying like a kid with his Xbox could hack the grid.
I've given an extreme example. But ultimately, unless we're willing to pay some money and incur some inconvenience to isolate certain parts of our controls from the public internet, then we cannot become materially more safe.
Now, you did send this report to the Trump administration last year that outlined pages of recommendations at all levels. I mean, did you get any response from the administration?
We know that it was read and favorably reviewed, okay, and that as a result, the final order that came out had a lot more to say about critical infrastructure than the previously public drafts that had been circulated. And perhaps we had some influence on that. It's not for me to say. But we were glad to see this new emphasis in the president's executive order that was, for people who follow these things, 13,800 last spring. But what we haven't seen yet is evidence of much follow-up.
Yeah.
And it's been a year. Or nearly a year, and 10 months or so. And there have been quite a few cabinet-level commissions, so on, or reporting groups, but we haven't heard from them, and I don't know what they're going to say.
Well, Joel Brenner, we've just got 1 minute to go here. I want to get back to the most chilling thing that you said earlier, that sometimes just the knowledge that a foreign government, in this case Vladimir Putin, could do something like, you know, turn off the lights, is enough to change America's national or have enough impact on America's national security response. I mean, I can't step away from that. With the knowledge that they did actually get as close to industrial control systems in this country, I mean, is it already too late?
No, but it is already very serious. And you have picked out the single most important thing I want your listeners to understand. There are some forms of power that are more effective before they are exercised than after they're exercised. Because after they're exercised, one, you know, you take response measures. You are at war. You are dealing with this. Right now, it's the mere existence of this possibility that does control, that could condition our response to Russian future provocations in Ukraine, in the Baltics, and elsewhere.
Well, Joel Brenner is the former Inspector General of the NSA and head of U.S. counterintelligence in the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. He's a senior research fellow at MIT's Center for International Studies. We'll have a link to the report that he forwarded to the Trump administration. We'll put that at radioboston.org. Joel Brenner, thank you so much.
A great pleasure. Thanks.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.